My name is Arv, and our teacher today is Lyndall. Lyndall Johnson, who's waving.
Yeah.
And our focus for this month, the focus for the year, are the 10 Oxfording pictures. And this is the last talk we'll have on Sundays for the second picture that Lyndall will be guiding us through. So that's our focus for today.
So before we start with this, I would like to welcome everybody. It's really nice to see you. And I feel like I've kind of been, well, I have been away for most of this month, so it's nice to be back. I'm Lyndall, and I will be talking this week about the second ox herding picture, Finding the Tracks of the Ox. Maybe not talking too much, because this week is your chance to share more about how this picture has affected you and your own responses to the picture of finding the tracks of the ox. Now, as usual, we'll start by taking some time to look at the picture and reflect on the poem. And this might be especially helpful this week because we didn't have our normal Sunday sit last week, and we might feel a bit of a need to reconnect, and I know I certainly do myself. So let's take a few moments to do this. First, taking some time just to look at the picture, taking it in. Noticing what stands out for you. Thoughts and emotions that arise, memories. Maybe something that didn't appear when you've looked at the picture before. And then I'll read the poem that goes along with the picture. And you can just take in these words as well and your responses to them. Along the riverbank under the trees, I discover footprints. Even under the fragrant grass, I see the prints. Deep in remote mountains, they are found. These traces can no more be hidden than one's nose looking heavenward. And once more, along the riverbank, under the trees, I discover footprints. Even under the fragrant grass, I see the prints. Deep in remote mountains, they are found. These traces can no more be hidden than one's nose, looking heavenward. So hopefully that has allowed us to kind of get back in touch with the message of the second picture. And I think, Arv, you can stop sharing the screen now. Thank you so much. And I forgot to thank you for your wonderful guided meditation, too. It was very grounding for me. So we've had a few moments to look at the picture, get in touch with our experiences, and I will also offer some thoughts of my own and from earlier talks this month as a kind of review of our focus for the month. So one of the things that Suze said in her talk a couple of weeks ago was that the second picture represents a transition from the first picture, where we're really confused and lost and we know something is wrong but we don't really know what we're trying to find, to the third picture, where we actually see the ox for ourselves, or at least catch a glimpse of the ox. And for me, this is a really helpful way to think about this second picture. So in the first picture, we're just wandering, looking here, looking there, looking back, and wondering if we even should have started on this journey, not really having a good idea of where we're going, just that we are going. But as we reach the second picture, things start to change. We've heard something, we've seen something, we've read something, and we begin to see the tracks of the ox. And we decide, okay, here's something I can pursue. So we set out on a path. But this time it just isn't any old path. It's not just one more of the many experiments we tried when we were back in picture one that never really quite panned out. This time is the path of the Dharma. We've gotten some exposure to and some connection with the teachings. And we feel like this is the way we want to go. We're ready to pursue it. And you can see that in this figure. He's no longer looking backward with all this fear and uncertainty. He's looking ahead. And you wouldn't say that the seeker really knows exactly where he's going. But he's got some signs, he has some leads, he's got these tracks, has some sense of direction. But we need to remember here, too, that at this stage, what we see are just tracks. The searcher hasn't actually seen the ox. He doesn't really know anything about the ox from his own experience. Just an idea of, oh, this is a way that I can go. And so that's the way it is with us at this time in practice. We really don't know much about what all this Dharma is about yet. We don't know much of anything from our own experience. Maybe you wouldn't even say that we really started to practice yet, but we've heard some things. Maybe we feel inspired, we feel curious, we feel interested, and we've decided that this is the way to go. So you might think of this picture as a place where faith starts to arise and where the seeker begins to think that, well, you know, maybe I might be able to do this thing. I just might be able to find that ox after all. And in Buddhism, we talk about different types and depths of faith, and typically there's blind faith where you believe something just because it's what you've always been told. And that might be the beliefs we have in picture one. And then there's bright faith, where you believe something because you're inspired by the experiences of someone else. And you think, wow, this sounds really good. I want to know more. And then there's verified faith, where you believe because you know from your own experience that this is helpful and this is true. So we could think of this picture as a place of bright faith. You know, you're starting to feel a certain confidence, interest, determination to pursue the path. But it's really coming more from somebody else's example. Maybe from a teacher you've heard, from a book. Maybe you have a friend that practices and you've talked to them. So you haven't seen much for yourself yet, but you've heard good things. You think this might be valuable. And you're trying to look and see what's there, but still very much dependent on the tracks, on the guidance. And I think this is probably a stage that a lot of us can relate to really easily, and we can remember from our own experience when we first begin to practice. And maybe you'll have some stories to share about that in our small groups. And there might also be some people here today that are really pretty new to Buddhism and new to this practice, and they feel like this picture describes perfectly. You know, you might feel it describes perfectly where you are now. You know, having the sense that meditation is a good thing to be doing, looking into Sims is a good thing to be doing, but not quite clear yet on where this practice is leading, not seeing the ox for yourself quite yet, but getting in there and exploring. And if that's your experience, that would also be a wonderful thing to share. But over the past month, we've also made the point that these pictures aren't only stages on the path that we go through, the things that we might be looking at that happened in our past, but they have a cyclic nature also, and we tend to return to these same mind states over and over again, even after we've been practicing for a while or even a really long time. And as we talked about last month, when we get caught up in craving or aversion, we return to the first picture. Or if we get caught up in doubt and confusion and fear, maybe during some of those times when we're starting a new phase of practice or opening to some new understanding, we return to that first picture where we just don't know what's going on. And it's kind of similar with this second picture. With the first picture, after we've had some experience, we're in a place of doubt and confusion or aversion or whatever, but we know that we don't have to stay there. We have a few tools at our disposal. And as we recognize the fact that we're caught up in these mind states of picture one, and we see all of our doubt and confusion and are wanting something different and better, we realize that we don't have to be stuck. And Susan talked about some of this in her talk at the beginning of the month, where at this stage we know enough to know that we can be mindful of the way we're feeling. We can start to investigate it. We can just experience it without adding anything else. Another way to think of this might be to say that what we know about the teachings are the tracks that we begin to follow when we recognize that we're back in this confused state. We know enough to stop, recognize our mind state, and then begin to really be aware of it. And when we start to do this, we see the tracks, we begin to see a way out of our pain and confusion. And maybe we feel more hope and confidence, a sense that there is a way forward. Even if we can't see it yet, you know, maybe we're still not out of the woods, but we aren't as stuck as we were. We have a sense that there can be some movement. We can come to understanding, even if we're still kind of not sure what's going on. So instead of fighting and struggling or wallowing in our confusion and frustration and doubt, we're ready to accept that this is the way it is right now and to begin to investigate it, learn more about it, maybe ask for advice and guidance if that's appropriate. So that's where we are in the second picture. We might still be confused. We might not know much, but we have some guidance to follow, some tools to use, and we can begin to sense that there's a way we can understand our situation. And I think this is true whether we are beginners or long-term practitioners. Over and over, we find that we need to turn again to the very basic instructions and the beginner's mind to begin to pick up those tracks that will lead us out of that place where we are in picture one. So last month, we mentioned that this first picture brings with it this sense of embarking on a journey or an adventure into the unknown. But with so much fear and doubt and confusion that sense of adventure might not be very strong. So in the second picture too has that sense of being on a journey into the unknown, but the qualities of adventure and possibility are much stronger here. You know, the seeker is more confident. They're looking ahead. They got some guideposts in these tracks. They maybe have the sense that they have what they need to at least pursue this journey. They feel more ready to meet it. And I think there's a lot more joy and hope in this picture than in picture number one. So in this final week of the month, we have some time to share about how this second picture has affected us, what it's brought up for us, including any sort of creative expression we might have had in response to this picture. And so just like we did last month, Arm and I will get this started by sharing our own experiences and our own expressions with you. So I will begin. And first, I'll say that in my own case, when I look at this picture, what I remember is a time before I really started to practice, but where I was feeling drawn toward Buddhism. And in a way, it was almost as if the ox was leaving these little hints along the way, you know, little things for me to find to help me get on this track. Like, for example, at this time, I came across the book, Three Pillars of Zen, and I read it without really understanding much of any of it. But for some reason, I was enthralled with it, and I fell in love with the ox herding pictures, especially. This was a time when, for some reason, I got a subscription to Tricycle Magazine. And here I was with this magazine, reading articles about meditation without really having meditated, clueless, but I wanted to know something about this. I think I went to a talk about Buddhism at the Theosophical Society. I might have visited some Tibetan temples, things like that. And then I went on my first retreat, out of the blue, really, based on a brochure I got from the Hollyhock Retreat Center up in Canada that came to me from who knows where, because I got on some mailing list, I guess. And so I decided to sign up and go on this 10-day Vipassana retreat. And just like Suze was talking about her first retreat, at first, there was plenty of fear, doubt, and confusion. I was not sure what I was doing here. I really didn't know what was going on. But in that retreat environment, there was some structure. There were teachers. There was a schedule. There were things I was supposed to do. And I had enough faith to give it a try. Do what I was told and see what happens. And so as the days passed, I began to feel less confusion, more interest, more confidence. A sense that I was on the right road, or at least a road that was worth following, at least for these 10 days. No glimpse of the ox yet, but enough faith to keep going and see where these tracks might lead. And so to express some of this experience and feelings, I made a collage, and I'll try to screen share my collage with you. I'm having some issues trying to figure out how to do this. So maybe I will just hold it up. it's wanting to do something weird with my preferences and stuff. But the collage here, you can sort of see there's a path. And I have these little symbols of the Buddha, mindfulness, little slogans here. Wandering, but not lost, because this was a sense where here I felt like I was still wandering and seeking, but no longer totally confused and lost. I had a sense of where I was going. And in a way, it's still sort of that way, that there's much that's still mysterious and much that I don't understand yet, but I'm not lost. I know the direction I'm heading. So I will let Arv take the floor then and share what he has to share with us about his experience with this ox herding picture.
Thank you, Lyndall. Yeah, that was lovely to see. And I could see it quite clearly. Oh, I just moved from gallery to speaker.
Oh, good.
So you took up the screen and I could see you in the image.
Good.
Yeah, so when I think of this picture, the thing that comes up in my own life is a time when I was feeling pretty lost. This was in my 30s, and I felt very out of touch with myself. I didn't know where emotions were coming from. They would sort of arise, and it felt like there was some, you know, sort of inner diving to be done. And what I recalled was that I had had a practice. I had been fortunate to have a practice of meditating in a very different tradition, but nonetheless, a meditation practice in my teens. And I just remembered, it had constantly called back to me since that time. Whenever I was in a period of difficulty, something in me pointed to, you know, if you did that more, you might get somewhere with this problem you're having or this struggle you're in. And it was finally enough that I decided, okay, I'm going to go back into this. I'm going to rediscover this meditation. And it felt a little like what the second picture feels to me. It's like you've caught the scent of something. You don't really know the path at that point, but there's something in your life that's pointing you in the right direction. And for me, I started by going to a retreat, which again was a very fortunate choice. I didn't know what Spirit Rock was. I didn't know what this tradition was, but I happened to go to a retreat with a Spirit Rock teacher. Again, just a very fortunate choice. And that was Mark Coleman. The retreat, you know, I had all of these sort of non-ordinary experiences where I felt like I had like pricked a burlap sack full of joy, and I just sort of pricked it with a needle and went, psh, and it just started bursting everywhere. And it was almost uncontrolled. I couldn't speak for large portions of the retreat. I was just like going through this joy feeling. And I mistook that, I think, for being a picture other than the second one. I thought that, oh, this is something. Oh, this is it. Whatever this thing is, it's it. And it wasn't. And it took me years to kind of free myself of the delusion that joy was just because it felt so non-ordinary, that that was something more than it was. I was really still in the second picture at that point. But all of this reminds me, this morning I was sitting with it and I was reminded of a poem. And so I wanted to read that as my sharing. This is a poem. I should mention the context too. This is part of what's known as the Therigata. Teri is senior ones. It refers to the senior or elder Buddhist nuns early in the tradition. Gatha, I think it means a work of poetry or an anthology of poems. So Therigata is the poems of these early Buddhist nuns. And it's been published recently also. You can look for that. This is a specific poem called Fire by the nun Uttara. She writes, I asked Bhattacharya, what is the path? Bhattacharya said, just see all the thoughts, words and deeds arising all by themselves, not from some imaginary point within. I only partly understood, but I took a seat. As the sun was setting, I saw the endless line of one thing leading to another that had brought me to the cushion that night. As the moon was coming up, I saw the arising and passing away of all things in every direction. As dawn was breaking, wisdom rose in the east and set fire to the long dark night. But don't take my word for it. Set fire to the darkness within. I promise, it's like nothing you've ever seen.
Wow. Thank you so much, Ar, for your sharing in that beautiful poem. It's interesting how many of us have had this experience of somehow being led to that time when we go on the retreat, and then the retreat is like, there is something there special. So now we have an opportunity for the rest of you to share with each other your own experiences with this second picture. And some of you may have brought a song or a poem or a piece of art to share, and some of you maybe haven't. And for those who haven't, I just want to say that I really sympathize with you, because I'm just starting to get a sense of how challenging it feels to me, the idea that every month I'm going to have to come up with some kind of creative expression for this particular picture. You know, it's a lot for all these oxherding pictures all year. So I want to encourage those of you who are tempted to leave because you didn't bring something to reconsider. It's fine. Sharing a story of your experience is enough. Listening to others and seeing what they have to share is enough. So don't let the feeling that you haven't brought anything that's good enough be a reason for leaving. If for some reason you aren't able to stay this week, if you have other commitments or just aren't in the right frame of mind for discussion, of course, it's fine to say goodbye for now. No problem with that. We understand that thing, and many thanks for joining us. But don't let this feeling of, oh, my art isn't good enough, keep you from continuing. So I will go ahead and put people into groups, and you'll have, I think, maybe about 15 minutes or maybe a little bit more. Making sure that you allow everyone to have their opportunity to share. And if there's time at the end of the session, you can have some back and forth discussion, but make sure each person has their time to share. Okay. I think it looks like everybody has returned. And so now we have some time for those of you who would like to maybe share something that you talked about in your small groups, ask a question, make a comment, whatever is coming up for you. So the floor is open.
I see Sean and Bruce raising their hands.
Yeah, Arv, before we're finished, would you please, if you don't mind, say that wonderful poem again?
Sure.
Thank you.
I see Peter's hand is up. Okay, well, Peter, why don't you go ahead, and then Lillian may be ready to share after that.
All right, thanks, y'all. This is wonderful, and just the personal stories you all have been sharing, you know, Lyndall, Suze, Lauren, over the last weeks, just they've been really inspiring about your own paths. And one thing that came, that every beach in our group with you know, Terry and Jennifer was just really awesome, is people were speaking about how different spiritual, different traditions actually were pointing toward universal spiritual truths. And our life experience had offered this. And so there's a way in which the oxherding pictures aren't necessarily just about Buddhism, but those footprints can take so many forms, forms of Christianity, forms of other religions. And that we'd each had some of that experience, but we're really glad to be here at Sims. So thank you.
Thank you so much. That's a really beautiful and important point. And there's so much shared. I mean, the truth is the truth. So thank you for bringing that point up, that many different paths are there leading to the same place.
Well, I can go ahead and share the poem that I wanted to share. It's Japanese Maple by Clive James. I did not write it. It is from the internet. And it kind of connects to it about like just all aspects of experience and life and death. And it came up for me when I was thinking about something to choose for this week. So I'll go ahead and read it. Japanese Maple. Your death near now is of an easy sort. So slow, a fading out brings no real pain. Breath growing short is just uncomfortable. You feel the drain of energy, but thought and sight remain. Enhanced, in fact. When did you ever see so much sweet beauty as when fine rain falls on that small tree and saturates your brickbat garden walls? So many amber rooms and mirror halls. Ever more lavish as the dusk descends, this glistening illuminates the air. it never ends. Whenever the rain comes, it will be there, beyond my time, but now I take my share. My daughter's choice, the maple tree is new. Come autumn and its leaves will turn to flame. What I must do is live to see that. That will end the game for me, though life continues all the same. Filling the double doors to bathe my eyes. A final flood of colors will live on as my mind dies, burned by my vision of a world that shone so brightly at the last and then was gone.
Wow. Thank you so much. Very beautiful, very moving.
I have a request.
Mm-hmm.
If Suze would be okay with that. Suze, you read a poem in our breakout. Would you share it again? It was
well great. I don't know if we have time, but the title of the poem is Patience, and the poet is Wendell Berry, and it's B-E-R-R-Y, and if you look that up on the internet, it'll come right up.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you liked it, Shelby. It's pretty wonderful.
Yeah. Everything by Wendell Berry is wonderful, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe time for one more, if anybody has a comment or question, and then I'll turn the floor over to Arv for our closing. Okay. It's kind of too bad that we can't hear everybody. Oh, Sean and Bruce, you have something.
So I have a poem by Antonio Machado. Last night as I was sleeping, I dreamt, marvelous error, that I had a spring breaking out here inside my heart. I said, along which secret aqueduct, water of a new life, water that I've never drunk, are you coming to me? Last night as I was sleeping, I dreamt, marvelous error. And this is my favorite line of any poem I've ever heard. Last night as I was sleeping, I dreamt, marvelous error, that I had a beehive here inside my heart.
Oh my.
And the golden bees were making white combs and sweet honey out of my old failures. Last night as I was sleeping, I dreamt there was a fiery sun inside my heart. It was fiery because it gave warmth as if from a hearth, and sun because it brought light and brought tears to my eyes. Last night as I slept, I dreamed it was God I had here inside my heart.
Thank you very much. What beautiful images. It's too bad we can't share everybody's poems, but we're running out of time, so I will let Arv take the floor for our closing. And thanks to everyone for being here and for your sharing. It was lovely.
Next month, so beginning the next Sunday that we meet, we'll be discussing the third Oxirane picture. So we're moving on to a new picture, starting the next one. I'd like to end, as we do, with an offering of metta, or loving kindness. May we be kind to ourselves and to others. May our hearts be at ease. May the suffering of this world be met with compassion. And may all beings be included in these wishes of loving kindness. Thanks, everyone.
Beautiful morning. Thank you.
Thanks to everyone who came and shared. It's really wonderful.